Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on Tuesday, March 19th, 2013. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Tapas and Vino. Located in the heart of Riviera Village, Tapas and Vino offers an idyllic location to meet and eat and has quickly become a favorite destination of local foodies. Opened in October 2011, this charming bistro offers an eclectic menu of small plates, salads, soups, and entrees for lunch and dinner daily. In addition, brunch is served every Saturday and Sunday with endless, yes, that's right, endless mimosas and bellinis. The popular outdoor patio boasts a vibrant scene each evening and features live music every Tuesday night. The extensive wine list offers varietals from regions around the globe, and brew enthusiasts will appreciate the comprehensive beer selection. Tapas and Vino also hosts monthly wine and/or beer education events, provides off-premise catering, and has a private dining room for small groups. Tapas and Vino is currently running a Not Just Tapas and Vino campaign for listeners of the South Bay Show. Mention the South Bay Show or South Bay by Jackie and receive 25% off a lunch or Saturday and Sunday brunch entree. Be sure to visit the Tapas and Vino Facebook page for weekly specials and discounts. Tapas and Vino is located at 1729 South Catalina Avenue in Redondo Beach. For more information, visit the website at tapasyvino.com. That's TapasyVino.com, Tapas y Vino, or call 310-791-8200. That's 310-791-8200. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show, or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, everybody. I am fine. Thank you very much. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you. And with us today is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, she's a little under the weather, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
As you said, I'm a little under the weather. I'm going to be a little nasally today, but I'm here.
Okay. Well, you're a trooper. I know no one could keep you away.
Yeah.
So, Jackie and George, it's something that we come back to over and over again. It is the number one disaster of more or less any kind, terrorists or natural disaster or something that Southern Californians are concerned about. It's earthquake. But we have a very, very special twist on our normal guests today. We have something of a technology that everyone has hoped for. Who's our guest today, Jackie?
Our guest this morning is Scott Nebenzahl. Scott is the Vice President of Sales and Director of Government Affairs for Seismic Warning Systems. Seismic Warning Systems has developed, deployed, and validated a technology that for the first time provides a reliable warning of an impending earthquake to alert people of imminent danger. Deployed throughout the state of California, the system has demonstrated zero false positives and successfully activated in numerous seismic events over the past 8 years. Scott has over 20 years of sales, marketing, political, and strategic development management experience in the public, private, and philanthropic sectors, and has served as Vice President of Sales, VP of Business Development, Regional Director, and Executive Director for Profit and Nonprofit Organizations. Scott is an expert in federally mandated disaster mitigation requirements. He was an independent business consultant and advisor to early-stage security and technology firms focused on homeland security and hazard mitigation segments. He received his Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of California at Santa Barbara in International Relations and Government Affairs. Welcome to the program, Scott. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you both. Thank you, Joe and Jacqueline and George. Pleasure to be here. I'm also somewhat under the weather, so if I'm nasally as well, bear with me.
Okay. Well, we certainly will bear with you, Scott, because this is the science fiction, also almost the science fiction that people have been hoping for, some kind of a warning. I think when we talk about earthquake and when we interview listeners, the one thing about earthquakes that is the most frightening, I think, for many, many people is its unpredictability. It could just happen at any second, Scott. Right now, we could have the big one. And that's what really drives people crazy. But what is the definition of seismic warning?
Well, Joe, first let me start that you're absolutely correct here. But what we've moved here is this convergence of scientific fantasy to scientific reality. And actually, you know, this aspiration, this goal of earthquake warning is nothing new. I remember back in the anniversary of the 1906 quake. Event we had here in San Francisco, I had a slide that started off with a quote from actually about 12 years before the 1906 quake that basically said the following. We have the technology to run a wire to the highest bell tower and ring when a shaking at distance commences. So this goal of the technology we now are deploying today certainly is nothing new. What is new and what is important is that, in fact, we have the ability now to detect that an earthquake has started and then relay that information and integrate that information into both a public warning and most importantly, automation of devices to protect people, property, and assets.
Right. Now, of course, it isn't just enough, even if and we're going to get into not the science, but the reality of what your company, Seismic Warning Systems, does, but it isn't just enough to provide warning of earthquakes. A false positive, and I want you to explain what that could be, a false positive would be devastating because it would put into effect and put into play so many different systems that would shut down economic activity and cause people to lose productivity and so forth. So if the system were in place and it worked, then the opposite would be bad if it gave false positives. So can you talk about that a little bit? Because it's right there on your front page, the world leader in earthquake early warning and the only company with a 10-year track record without a false positive.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think you're very, very correct. First, let me state, earthquake warning is in place, though. One of the things that we're obviously very, very proud of, having moved this technology forward and into the marketplace now for going on 12 years, is that we have deployed these earthquake warning devices in first responders, fire stations, in schools, in businesses up and down the state of California. And you are equally correct here that false positive was the goal from the outset. To have an effective warning system and have an effective product that both people and businesses would adopt, you had to ensure that a signal, that trigger that you are activating on was in fact an earthquake. And this is how we fundamentally approach this challenge, and candidly have poured millions and millions of dollars of research in over the years to take away that false positive capability, certainly to the best of our ability, because if it's not reliable, people won't use it, number one. Number two, of course, you have the cry wolf issue, where if it, you know, triggers and nothing is actually happening, then the confidence in that and the public reaction to such a warning will erode. And last and most importantly, candidly, from a commercial a business perspective here, industry won't adopt it. Shutdown costs, as you say, are not they're not a non-trivial cost. Mm-hmm. I've spoken with people at Intel, and they have dabbled and deployed various early technologies. And we heard a story of a gentleman that, you know, went around and sort of banged on this sensor and triggered it. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions of dollars of shutdown costs and lost productivity. So I really appreciate you focusing on that, because from the outset, we have perfected this technology, which is based on the analysis of the first wave of an earthquake called the P wave, to ensure that the shaking at the site that the earthquake controller, for lack of a better term, is at, where it's doing something for a business, let's say, is of a meaningful, or what we say, actionable level. And we then had to be able to remove other ground vibrations that might trigger this earthquake warning into that false positive that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And the first way that we went about doing this, of course, was to patent a number of technologies, but the core to that was deploying redundant sensors so that not just one earthquake sensor, but both earthquake sensors had to detect the exact same P wave. And then there are a variety of other algorithmic and process-oriented techniques that we did to ensure that, like you said, when the earthquake warning system goes off, you can count on it, number one, and you better start responding and initiating those protective measures.
Right. So there's so many different ways to go, so many wonderful avenues of inquiry. Let's start with how old is earthquake early warning and seismic warning systems, your company? When did your company come into being?
Well, seismic warning systems came into being in basically late 1999, early 2000. Mm. The origin of the technology came out of the University of British Columbia, a very famous, highly respected worldwide structural engineer and seismologist, Dr. Carlos Ventura. And we began to dabble in that technology, acquire, and then, like I said, expand upon that by developing this this robust industrial earthquake warning system. See, there are basically three components to earthquake warning, and then a fourth, which is really important when we get to the concept of public warning. First, of course, is the ability to detect and analyze that event your sensors have detected. But then the second is that you need the ability to disseminate that information rapidly, and then automate, you need devices ostensibly to automate that response into a protective action. So like in the case of schools where we plug into the PA system so that the schools will initiate their drop, cover, and hold. or in the case of a fire station, which we have, you know, just recently had another wonderful success with scores of our units activating in the recent ANZA event of last week in Southern California, where the fire station doors automatically go up and the emergency lights go on and the audible alert goes out, so that our first responders are not only protected personally, but that their equipment is not sort of held in that fire station. You know, we saw this in the Mexicali event April of 2010, where the Calexico Fire Department was delayed 15 minutes in responding to the earthquake because it had to extract its apparatus from the fire station because the doors were closed, jammed shut from the event. So these are the types of components that represent a complete earthquake warning system. And then the next, which is equally important, is obviously training as well. People need to know what to do, and that's what I like to say is sort of the third stool there of an earthquake warning package.
Mm-hmm. What's fascinating, most fascinating to me, from a business perspective, Seismic Warning Systems, your company, is actually the only business entity listed on the Wikipedia page that talks about the science of P waves. P waves are either a primary wave or pressure wave. You can take your pick in the literature, the scientific literature, but just to simplify it for the audience, P waves or primary waves are the first waves that are created when an event occurs, a slippage. Many people in California are very familiar with this language, either a slippage of one fault against another or one fault going over another. When that first occurs, there's some very rapid waves that are emitted, these primary waves or pressure waves. As they talk about the science, they talk about your company as the only commercial company that predicts these with your QuakeGuard system. Financially speaking, is there some way that people can invest in your company?
The short answer is sure.
is it public?
No, this is a privately held, we are always welcoming, certainly, the equity support and interest in moving our technology forward. I'll use that as a great segue of the importance of what we're doing next in earthquake warning, if I may.
Yes.
So we've had this track record, like you've said, we're listed in Wikipedia, we're listed all over the web. Thankfully, still number one on Google, in part because we actually have products in the marketplace that keep working. There are a variety of P-wave detectors that have been available in the marketplace for quite a number of years. And these are particularly low-end devices, single sensor, and they are targeted to the home consumer market for the most part. There are industrial-level, what we call seismic switches, which is a whole different technology. That's like what you have in Los Angeles when they call it the Northridge valve. When a bunch of shaking hits your gas valve in many parts of the L.A. basin, where I grew up, by the way, are now required to have this shut-off valve. That's when the actual S-wave, as they call it, the shear wave, the damaging wave of an earthquake, has already arrived. And, of course, that's not warning. That's obviously response. But to get to where seismic is going, and certainly why I think people will be very, very interested in continuing to invest in this tremendous opportunity, by the way, which is it's about a $9 $1 billion annually worldwide market. It is a huge need and demand for earthquake warning mitigation and early warning technologies like seismic is perfecting at this point in time. Myself and George have been to China now a couple of times, and I received personally scores of inbound interest for our technology from Latin and South America. I've worked now with the Mexicans and others, and of course throughout sort of the Pacific Rim, and including India. But to get back to where we're going and why this is sort of exploding right now, certainly post the Chile quake and now of course the catastrophic Great Japan quake, is seismic warning is now taking what has been this standalone earthquake warning technology, this P-wave detector that we've had at industries and the different places I've already mentioned, and we are leaping forward here to develop networked early warning services. And this is really what is changing the game, so to speak, out there right now. Not only do you, of course, get more reliability and greater enhancements, but you also now, with a networked regional warning approach, actually double the amount of warning time, ostensibly, that you can get from just a single P-wave sensor. Mm-hmm. And this is the whole key with earthquake early warning. Time is everything because the amount of time that you receive an earthquake warning is a function of sort of the depth and distance, how far you are away and from the earthquake and how deep it is, but regardless, is ostensibly quite short. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a hurricane warning where we have, you know, minutes to an hour of heads up, oh, there's a terrible storm coming. Like you said, we live in Southern California, and those of us here in the Bay Area that have been through the events that we have up here, earthquakes are, you know, sudden and can be obviously extreme. And so earthquake warning system needs to do all of that detection, all of that analysis, all of that dissemination of that warning, and all that automation in literally milliseconds. So we launched in 2009 the nation's first regional earthquake warning project. We did this down in Southern California. There's quite a bit on the news about it, a lot of blog stuff, a lot of hits that you can find searching the Coachella Valley Regional Warning System. And this public-private partnership was where the local regional government, the emergency management community, the business community, and the schools partnered with Seismic to create this first regional network capability. And do so in a way that wasn't going to cost the taxpayers ongoing financial commitments that they didn't have, and especially the schools. As we know, the schools are always scrambling to let alone fix their buildings, keep their teachers and modern textbooks. So we're very, very proud of this model that was launched in this cruise project down there because it incorporates everything that we're doing now. And the key, like I said, is focusing on speed and then being able to distribute that warning in milliseconds. You know, sort of the – well, go ahead.
Well, Scott, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was thinking – that this is I think this is something that is very newsworthy. No wonder many news organizations are covering it. It's the Coachella Valley Regional Earthquake Warning System, CREWS, and you can find out more at CREWSNET.org. That's CREWSNET.org. It seems extensive. It looks like a network of sensors some 3 or 4 or 5 miles wide and about 10 or 15 miles long. Can you give some scale to the number of sensors and their distribution over or over a geographic area?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, and thank you. And I apologize. Obviously, I'm very passionate about what I'm doing, so if the host can't get a word in edgewise, we have a lot to talk about. And we're
That's
really
all right. That's all right. I rarely get to talk, but I'd rather listen to you than than Joe.
Well, I won't make a crack about my wife there. But anyhow, the cruise project actually, on a sense of scale here, is going to sensor Southern San Andreas Fault as well as the San Jacinto Faults. They're parallel fault zones there, and both sides. If you think of sort of the Palm Springs area from the Salton Sea past Indio all the way up through to where the Banning Pass is, two faults run along the mountainsides on each side of the Valley Desert. That's the San Jacinto and the southern portion of the San Andreas. We will finish instrumenting probably a total of there'll be over 50 sensor sites, and the cruise project represents a total of 136 participant sites as well. These are our public dispatch centers, our schools, our fire stations, and alike. And then after cruise was launched in 2011, the Imperial County Board of Supervisors loved what was going on in Coachella Valley so much, and they too applied with their mitigation money to from FEMA to expand the cruise project into Imperial County. We call that iCruise, Imperial County Regional Learning System. And so at the end of the day here, right now, we have combined projects that represent instrumentation and early warning that's running all the way from the Mexico border up through Riverside County and the Banning Pass and the Beaumont area. And these are just templates because we have these regional warning projects replicated throughout the state. We call the L.A. Basin La Ruse, L.A. Regional Early Warning Network, and we've been partnering with people in San Diego County and even with NASA out in the Antelope Valley, where they use our technology out at the Dryden Flight Research Center up in the Mojave Desert. And so all these regional projects, it is our plan and our goal, and in fact we're working with the state of California now to make this a reality, will interoperate together to create a Southern California regional early warning network. And then, of course, we're doing the same here in the Bay Area. We call that the Bay Area Regional Early Warning Projects. And then at the end of the day, of course, we'll have earthquake early warning throughout the state of California. And we see this reality being completed probably within the next 24 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. This is amazing. You're saying that in many cases, in just less than 2 years, there will be early warning detection systems in some of the key areas in California that are vulnerable to these kinds of significant events. But, Scott, tell us, now the warning is really going to be focused on these entities that have paid the bill to get the information. So it's going to be these school systems, these early first responders, so they can get their fire engines out of the buildings that they're in, and they're going to get a warning of how long before a significant event.
Well, let's start with the Coachella Valley, and there are a few things in that question that I'll expand upon. But the warning down in the Coachella Valley itself will, let's say, based on the great shakeout drill that we've all been participating, maybe upwards of 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. But this is fundamentally important. 30 seconds in earthquake warning is an eternity where so much can be done. But this same system and approach would afford those in the L.A. Basin up to a minute of warning based on that same scenario. But this is where sort of things diverge, and where the approach that seismic warning has taken differs and branches off, shall we say, from where the academic research and work on earthquake warning has gone. Because if we had a repeat of the Northridge earthquake, okay,
mm-hmm.
The current, everybody talks about the Japanese model and how fantastic the Japanese earthquake warning system is, and we certainly applaud the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. We've heard figures approximating now almost $1 billion invested over time in the Japanese earthquake warning system. But these current model approaches to earthquake warning take a lot of time to process the information because they're doing things differently than the way seismic approached things. Remember how I said we have two sensors at one site and a variety of other mechanisms that we do that speed up the process. And the other, not to get too science-based in this, but one of the other things is we're actually just focusing on a shaking intensity as opposed to trying to figure out the magnitude of an event, because shaking intensity is what really you and I and a business and the kids that need to get under their desk care about. We don't care if it's a 6.0 or a 6.8. Yeah, it's going to be a lot greater shaking at a 6.8, but regardless, at 6.0, you're still needing to protect yourself or shut things off, right? So getting the exact magnitude is secondary to getting the right action started. So back to my Northridge scenario here. So we talk about, and there's a lot of, a lot
now,
of chatter.
Now, Scott, I want to hold that thought. We're we're going back to the Northridge scenario, but we have to take a station break. I want to tell people that you're listening to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, with Scott Nebenzahl of Seismic Warning Systems, and they mean it. They can actually give us warning of an impending earthquake, and that is just fascinating. The science is real, the business is real, and deployment has already begun. Fascinating. But at this time, we'd like to take a break and thank a sponsor. Jackie, who are we thanking today?
Well, Joe, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional service of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, Torrance South Bay YMCA, Palos Verdes Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with financial planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong is dedicated to helping you navigate to financial success. call 310-542-0011 for a free consultation, or you can visit the website at www.bcws.com.
All right. So, Scott, you were taking us along a scenario.
Yes. We'll get back to Northridge here a second. So the important point that I wanted to highlight to the listeners here is that there is a public narrative right now that talks about the fact, just like the Japanese system, is that all earthquakes produce what they call a blind zone, or we'll call this a fail zone, right? Where if you're close to an earthquake, you're not going to be able to get any warning. And at best right now, the efforts underway reflect at least a 20-mile radius where no earthquake warning is available. And so on this Northridge scenario again, just think of a repeat of Northridge that cost so many lives and billions upon billions of dollars of damages, the L.A. Basin would not be able to receive any warning whatsoever on a publicly run earthquake warning system. Mm-hmm. By contrast, with this cruise, this regional network, and the technology that we're deploying, we would be able to provide that same impact zone a seconds of warning at minimum. And so there's just an important shift here that we want to stress, that in fact you can what we say obviate, get rid of that blind zone problem. And mm-hmm. earthquake early warning should be available to everyone and shouldn't have to be only beneficial, if we're going to spend millions upon millions of dollars, mm-hmm. To those at distance.
I'm sorry, Scott. You're saying that this is the difference between what you do at seismic warning systems and academia?
So correct. So I'm using, let's say, the Japanese model, or you may have seen, of course, a lot of press in Southern California about the fact that USGS and what they call CISN, the California Seismic Integrated Network, are working on earthquake warning as well. And we are actually engaged in a process with the state of California and with the academic community in a earthquake early warning working group convened under the governor's Office of Emergency Services to roll out earthquake warning throughout the state of California, and we're really excited about that process. But yes, what I'm stating is that the current academic beta earthquake warning efforts, the efforts that USGS is promoting in the newspapers and all of that, has what's known as this blind zone. And you can't get away from this blind zone. It's just like they have in Japan and all of that. And yes, what I'm saying is that the technology that we're deploying in Southern California in CRUZ and these Imperial iCRUZ projects, in fact, does not have these blind zones. We have what we like to say a no-shadow zone. We can beat the S-wave to the surface. And this is done because we have faster processing, we have faster communication, we have analysis that's done on site instead of collecting analysis from a variety of different sensors and sending that back to a data station, and we'll have a very, very dense coverage. So that's the big issue here, is if we're going to move forward collectively as a state in deploying earthquake early warning, be sure that those in our economic centers, like Los Angeles and the Bay Area, can actually receive the benefit of early warning by ensuring that they can get an event detection, even if it's right there at ground zero, as we like to say.
Right, right. And still along the same lines of 10, 20, 30 seconds.
Much less if you're right when you're talking about this blind zone area that we will beat when Seismic's early warning network is complete. Mm-hmm. You're talking on the order of seconds, not right. tens to thirties of seconds. You'll still need to be at distance. But you know, we just did an analysis of this nice little wake up shaker again down here in the Coachella Valley. And the blind zone, of course, existed down there as well. But our system would have produced a second at the epicenter and 5 seconds out of distance in Palm Desert area and even upwards of 10 seconds out in Palm Springs. So there is a performance issue, and it's sort of a resource allocation issue. Let me touch on another point that you got to here as well. But Seismic is charging for this service, and you know, somebody's going to have to pay for this at the end of the day.
Right.
The answer to that is partially yes. We're really proud of the partnerships that we have established with local government here. Because what we view as important is creating a way that where businesses that are going to, you know, sort of high value adopters, subscribers of earthquake warning, in essence become the subsidize the rest of us receiving early warning. These public-private partnerships, these encompass schools, fire stations, all of these public benefit institutions that, in fact, are not having to pay ongoing for earthquake warning services. So really the goal here is to create a public benefit, ongoing public benefit, without an ongoing public expense. And by partnering with industry to achieve that objective, we can get there. And that's really, really important for us, for your listenership to understand here.
Now, I have sort of the classic question, which is as we wind down our conversation, and we're gonna go to George in a few minutes, and he's gonna talk about future shows and upcoming guests. But the classic question in my mind, I think that many people might ask, is okay, we have these systems in place. A public-private partnership. Many institutions have the beeper, or they're going to get the text when the big one is coming. But then, I'm just, you know, an ordinary citizen. Will I have to pay to get the text or the beeper so that I can know when the big one's coming so I can protect my family? How does that work?
Well, let me address the excellent, excellent question, and the answer is perhaps, or perhaps the government will find hundreds of millions of dollars and partner with us and distribute that signal. But more to the point, that capability isn't quite there yet. And what I think we should be there's sort of two contexts here. We also sort of view that as notification as opposed to warning. And I think we all are consumers of information. Hurricane Sandy demonstrated this tremendously, of our dependence on our handheld devices and all of that for information and for warning. And certainly we want to see all of that benefit make it out to everybody, but the goal of the state and the goal of Seismic at this point in time, I shouldn't speak on behalf of the state, is of course effective mitigation. And in earthquake early warning, a lot of that effective mitigation revolves around automating responses. And obviously the protection of people and infrastructure, our gas, our nuclear, our water infrastructure. These are important first steps and first deployments for earthquake early warning. And then we have to finish building out that reliable communications infrastructure to be able to deliver that public warning for free, as you're talking about, reliably and in a timely manner to your phones or your texts. And then one other point is that there's this training aspect to this. Just getting a text that there's an earthquake warning in no context. I mean, we work with the nation, if not the world's most foremost social scientist on this subject, on alert and warnings. So we're very, very cognizant of the importance of not just providing raw information, earthquake, right? Yeah. But that people need to be told and or taught and educated what to do when they receive that information.
I have an idea, Scott. Has anybody thought, I know that we're all, living in the technological age and we're getting texts and stuff. What about the old air raid warning systems? We still have them here in the South Bay. They go up once a month.
You have one in Hermosa Beach has one.
Hermosa Beach does have one.
It goes off every day at noon, but Manhattan does not, and I don't believe that Redondo does.
But doesn't that make sense? Like, everybody would hear that. You wouldn't be dependent on having your phone with you or being at home and being able to pick up a phone or something. I mean,
that
to me sounds like the easiest. That's what they do in tornado country, don't they?
It is, and Jacqueline, I think you're really sort of on the right path, but unfortunately not an implementation or deployment that we see taking place in as litigious a society as we are, and of course the cost of deploying these sirens. So they're few and far between, but you bring up that really, really good point here about equitability of warning and being sure that everybody has that capability. And that is, very candidly beyond scope here of seismic in this discussion. You're talking about public policy issues that we are working through and trying to help and collaborate with the state to figure out at this point in time. But there are a variety of ways. But for us at this point in time, and what I think is important for people to understand as they get excited about earthquake early warning becoming a reality, you really want to have a whole connected chain from the point of detection all the way through the distribution. And this is why having devices in your home, in your school, in the workplace, is going to be one of the most effective ways to get early warning to the most people the quickest way and most reliable way.
Scott Nebenzahl, Vice President of Sales and Director of Government Affairs for Earthquake Early Warning, the company Seismic Warning Systems. We're going to come back to you, Scott, in a moment. Right now, we normally take this time for George to tell us what's coming up.
It's my turn.
Yeah.
Coming up tomorrow evening, our co-host, Miss Jackie, hopefully she will feel better, and or she will have somebody else, women's self-defense class designed for women by women. Every Wednesday evening, the Triton Room at Fitness Evolution at 200 North Harbor Drive in Redondo Beach. This is a free class for daughters, mothers, sisters, nieces, friends to help empower and inform and enjoy. And Jackie, how was this last week?
Oh my goodness, these women are having so much fun. They're really getting into it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Awesome. And coming up, our Manhattan Beach CERT Association does have classes on CPR and AED that we will be training on March 30th. We have about seven slots open for our March 30th 8 a.m. to noon class. It's $45 per person, which is a reduced fee. It is a Red Cross two-year certification. Our instructors volunteer all of their time. Also, on April 27th, we will have both an a.m. class and an afternoon class. And also on June 22nd, we will have an a.m. class and an afternoon class. And you may go to our website, which is mbcerta.org. On the left-hand column, you may click on the CPR AED and pick the one that you're interested in. We'll send you off a flyer. You can send in your money and take part in that. So those five classes still coming up in the future. Also coming up on March 28th, the City of Manhattan Beach, along with our Manhattan Beach CERT Association, is having a town hall meeting, and it will be about tsunamis. Rick Wilson, the senior engineering geologist and science coordinator for the State of California's Tsunami Preparedness and Hazard Mitigation Program, will be there to speak, along with our own battalion chief, Frank Chiella. He will be there. We will be set up. More prepared will be there. We may have some other people there setting up tables to offer up supplies and odds and ends and information, but it is on March 28th, 6:30 p.m. at the Joslyn Center, 1601 Valley Drive in Manhattan Beach. And indeed, we do have a number of areas within our city and the cities to our south are even in more danger because they don't have the rise that we have going up the hill. So that is March 28th. Also coming up next, now first we're going to talk about the SAGE Expo. Saturday, April 20 and Sunday, April 21st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the SAGE Expo, which is a Sustainable and Green Environment Expo, will be had at the Manhattan Beach National Guard Armory on Bell Avenue off of Rosecrans. For those of you that have a nonprofit, it is free to take part. For other business vendors, there is an expense. I've met with a number of the people that are going to be there. We will actually be setting up and we are going to do some workshops. We will do workshops on CPR and AED, on shutting off your gas meter, on some both possible fire and medical. So we will be there for a few days. A number of other people will be there. If you're interested in learning more, go to sageexpo.net, and it will offer up all of the information that you need about this particular expo on April 20th and 21st. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will take part in it. And last but not least, our guest next Tuesday, which is the 26th. Next Tuesday, our guest is going to be some guy that's been on it three times before. And a couple weeks ago, we actually misspoke. There's been somebody that's been on three times as well as another guest. The guy's name is George Butts. And next week, we are going to talk about fire safety, something we have not covered. We've covered disaster medical and first aid and psychology. And now we're going to talk about fire safety in the home and the workplace. Mm-hmm. And that's what I have for this week on, wow, it is March 19th. Where's the time going, guys?
Is it really 2013 already?
It's 2013, and that will be our 50th show.
Right. So next week, fire safety. I'll need a picture of this guy, George Butts.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find something different. Maybe in some turnout. Maybe I can get a picture from our muster.
Okay.
With me trying to put some fire boots on that are five sizes too small for me.
So we're talking with this is the South Bay Show. We're talking with Scott Nebenzahl of Seismic Warning Systems. The website is seismicwarning.com. That's S-E-I-S-M-I-C warning.com. Seismicwarning.com. So fascinating topic, Scott. Fascinating sort of build out. It's slow. You were very careful, as you should be, as the VP of Sales and Director of Government Affairs. You were very careful to you know, sort of separate what you as a company can do, a for-profit entity, versus public policy issues, such that, as you've said, you know, these systems can be deployed as a public-private partnership with schools and other sort of necessary facilities receiving the warnings, but it's really paid for by the professionals and the institutions and sort of the installations that have to have that warning, whether it be like oil refineries and other large operations like that, for whom 20 seconds, you hit a button, it stops certain processes such that if an earthquake does cause significant damage, you don't have an explosion. They will pay for that. But for the general public, it's going to be a while, isn't it, before we get that early warning ourselves?
Well, I don't actually think very long. I think that once we work through as we are, and I really want to applaud our governor and our secretary of what they call CALEMA, and now sort of reverting back to the Office of Emergency Services, for taking a leadership role in this, in being committed that we don't have to wait much longer. It's been over 15 years that they've been addressing this issue. But we also know the reality that government needs to change. The government cannot pay for it all. And thus, bringing industry to the table to bring about a collective solution is absolutely the right thing. So I would say that your listeners should be really, really optimistic and know it won't be another 15 years, that in fact we see this all getting wrapped up relatively quick. And from our perspective, candidly, whether the state can figure out the right public-private partnership model or not, Seismic Warning Systems is standing up these regional networks. We have heard that the applicants, Riverside County and Imperial County, are getting their grant money from FEMA. So we're making this a reality in the absence of government. And then we're going to make it available very, very inexpensively, even to businesses, regardless. So I think it won't be too much longer, and the public will also have its ability and access to this important life-saving mitigation technology.
Well, it's fascinating. It's certainly unique among those businesses out there that either provide all kinds of kits that you can buy for your home to sit out the time between when an event occurs and first responders and other help can arrive. This is a very unique place where seismic warning is possible today. The science is real and available. Although a short time, it is certainly something that that governmental agencies and industrial operations can benefit from. Thank you so much for being with us, Scott.
Well, thank you so much. I really, we all here at Seismic Warning Systems, and on behalf of George Dixon, our CEO, are appreciative that you're bringing this to the airwaves, and that we're getting tremendous support. So thank you all again, and Jacqueline, it's a pleasure to meet you as well as George.
Very nice meeting you, Scott. Thank you.
Thank you, George.
George went to work, I think.
No, I'm sorry. I'm still here. Okay. There was noise. I pushed the button because there was some beeping going on.
All right. Well,
but I've been at work since 6, so what can I say?
Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.